Welcome, everybody. I'm Richard Krause. I hope you're staying happy, healthy, and safe. It's a big show, so let's get right at it. Later on, we'll get to know reggae fusion artist Amoy, who recently received a Juno Award nomination for Reggae Recording of the Year for her incredible song, Stir This Thing. So I'm gonna hold you down and keep you around, light up a fire up this. Stir it up, stir this thing. You never let me down. So I'm gonna hold you down, keep you around, light up a fire up this. Seven-time Juno Award nominee Amoy presents an innovative and unique reggae sound that blends elements of old-school rocksteady, dancehall, soul, and R&B. With an infectious voice and messages of empowerment, Jamaican-born Amoy is a self-declared soul rebel. That's a little bit later on in the show. First up, let's meet Kathleen Monroe, Law & Order superfan and the star of the new Law & Order Toronto, Criminal Intent. It's the new adaptation of the legendary Law & Order brand based on the classic series created by Dick Wolf. A psychological thriller wrapped in a criminal investigation, it will showcase original Canadian stories written and produced by and starring Canadians. Kathleen Moore, who you've seen portraying Dr. Amanda Perry on Stargate Universe, Samantha Flack on CSI New York, and on shows like Chicago PD, Chicago Med, and FBI, plays Detective Sergeant Frankie Bateman, part of an elite squad of detectives who investigate high-profile crime and corruption in Metro Toronto. Kathleen and I talked about how watching Jill Hennessy as Claire Kincaid on the original Law & Orders influenced her decision to pursue acting, and much, much more. Here's Kathleen Monroe.
In Toronto's war on crime.
I'm Detective Graff, this is Detective Bateman.
The worst offenders are pursued by the detectives of the Specialized Criminal Investigations Unit. These are their stories.
Tell me a little bit about being a Law & Order superfan.
You know, I started watching when I was a kid. It would be on syndication. When I was home from school, if I was sick or, you know, had a day off or something. And there was something about, I think it was like maybe one of the first adult shows I watched, like one of the first ones I encountered. And it felt like I was getting this peek into New York. Like New York just had kind of mythological status in my brain. It wasn't any place that I knew, you know, the city wasn't something I knew specifically. And the characters, I think there was something really reassuring about seeing them. And also my grandfather, who I was close to as a kid, was a homicide detective in Buffalo, New York. And so there was something of a, you know, like I had an inroad a little bit to imagining what his life might've been like when he was younger. So just all those things drew me in. And then it was really watching that show around the same time that I was kind of figuring out that acting was a thing, you know, that these were actors doing a TV show and realizing that that was something I liked to do. It hooked me pretty young. And going back and watching the original series, which I've done, again recently, it's amazing how much I actually remembered. Like it kind of sticks around.
I'm also told that Jill Hennessy had quite an impact on you as well, because of playing Claire Kincaid, of course, but she was Canadian. You're sitting in Canada watching the show. So it meant something to you.
Oh, absolutely. I just remember kind of, so I don't even know how I learned that she was Canadian, but I knew that. And I just remember watching her and being like, wow, she's doing, like, she's in there, she's doing this. Like, I want to do that. And I just thought she was so beautiful and so cool. And she's smart and she's in there with all the guys. And it is a show, you know, it's always been a show that doesn't really, like, where everyone involved is sort of considered an intellectual equal, you know, and there weren't a ton of female characters that I was seeing in story worlds populated largely by men who kind of had that same respect written into the roles. And yeah, there was just something about her that I was like, this is, she's allowed to do this. Like, maybe I can be allowed to do this at some point. Yeah, she's cool.
There are two different kinds of Law & Orders. Mm-hmm. So tell me which one Law & Order Toronto Criminal Intent is. I think the title probably gives it away, but there's one that's more procedural, and then there is one that's a procedural and then with a bit more of a law aspect to it. Which one do you fall under?
Yeah, so the criminal intent format really centers on the investigation, and it really centers on, I mean, quite literally the criminal intent. So what is the intention of the people behind the crimes? And we don't have the sort of serialized element of something like organized crime. You know, I think that offshoot is a little more serialized. And, you know, in the SVU world, there's the, you know, contained episodes, and then we have these sort of through lines that guide through the seasons. And I'd say we'd fall into a more, a format sort of similar to that, in that it's procedural. We have contained episodes, but we don't get the courtroom scenes the way that the traditional Law and Order and SVU often do.
You're listening to Kathleen Monroe on The Richard Krause Show. Watch her in Law and Order Toronto, Criminal Intent on City TV.
Because the criminal intent format is based on the psychology of the suspect. And so every episode, instead of ending, you know, instead of being kind of half the investigation and then half the courtroom, we're really with the detectives almost the entire time. And we also get to see a little more of the people involved in the crime. So that little mini movie is intact. And then, it always ends with us really trying to tease out a confession, because that's where this stuff lives, is getting a confession, really drawing out the words of the suspects themselves.
Tell me what we can expect from Detective Sergeant Frankie Bateman, the character you play.
Sure. I mean, I've really loved playing her. I mean, she's a, in some ways, like she lives in the Law and Order world for sure. I mean, she's a pretty, you know, I don't know if quintessential or prototypical is the right word. I don't think it is, but I mean, she definitely lives in the world of Law and Order, in that she's, she follows protocol. She's got her little things that make her tick, but she, I would say she's written to be quite a smart character. She's intuitive and empathetic. She connects with people and really feels for people who are impacted by circumstances that maybe put them either in danger or put them into the position of committing crimes. And she's also cerebral. So she finds comfort in kind of relying on the system, figuring out the granular details, like who, what, where, when, like how did this stuff happen, where Graf, her partner, played by Aidan Young, is a little more idiosyncratic, and he's a little bit more into the why of things, and he's always observing things and taking things in, and so the two of them work very differently in some ways, but work together as about, you know, two halves of a whole.
Daniel Siddiqui siphoned $300 million out of his company. Wasn't returning phone calls, wasn't answering questions. Now the money's gone, so he either lost it or he stole it.
And somebody figured it out. They got hot, they got angry, they wanted revenge.
No, whoever did this isn't coming in hot. Pentobarbital, it's pretty much the cleanest way to die. Doctors use it for assisted death. It's painless, bloodless. It's premeditated. It's the opposite of hot. It's cool.
Interesting that 4 or 5 years ago, you worked with Aidan Young on a film called Elsewhere.
Done your research.
Funny how everything really is, or time is a flat circle, or whatever it is. Like, everything does connect eventually, I think.
It really does. Yeah. It was lovely. I mean, as soon as I saw that he was the one doing it, I was already kind of, you know, I'd thrown my hat very, very firmly into the ring for this job and was really fighting for it. And so by the time he was cast and I heard that was announced, I was like, oh, this is just, it would be such joy, because we spent this lovely time in a beautiful, beautiful part of Canada in Sauk, BC, shooting this movie, and just got along. Like, we just like each other. And I think being able to kind of jump into a ring, especially this kind of job where it's like 5 or 6 days a week, 17 hour days, sometimes we're sitting beside each other, you know, we better get along.
Jill Hennessy told me about shooting her seasons of Law and Order, and it's a 24 hour a day job. I mean, it's an unbelievable thing, because the stories move quickly, the shows move along like a bullet. And so the shooting, I assume, must be very taxing.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't end, because the dialogue will come out for the next episodes or the next days. And so, you know, even when you go home, it's sort of learning. But I mean, luckily, the team is incredible. And you know, if ever I was feeling like, oof, my brain is getting a little tired here, I'd, you know, just lock eyes with Aidan and he'd pick up the slack. And we kept things going for each other, I think. And you know, then you get Casey Collins and Karen Robinson, Ryan Mangesha, Nicola Carré-Demude and then the amazing guest cast come in, there's a lot to fall back on. So, you know, it doesn't feel like the heavy lifting that it could, because the team is so robust. And also the writing is really good, I think, you know, getting scripts where there's emotional continuity and character continuity and where the logic of the case makes sense. It's that much easier to remember. So, I mean, I've never worked harder in my life, but, but you know, it was a joy every day, like truly a joy every day. That's so cool that you talked to Jill Hennessy.
Yeah. No, she's been on the radio show, my show, a bunch of times. Oh, she makes records. She's so talented. She does all things. Singer, songwriter, and no, I love her. She's just fantastic and so open and fun. And she is great.
That's so cool.
Sometimes the dead do speak.
That's putting it kindly.
What happened to him?
That's not your business.
That was Kathleen Monroe on The Richard Krause Show. Watch her in Law and Order Toronto, Criminal Intent on City TV. I love talking about Law and Order. I got kind of hooked on that show many years ago, not when it was on at night at the regular time, but 25 years ago when I was working in bars. I'd get home at 3:30 in the morning, and it was on all night. So I'd come home after a chaotic night at work when God knows what would happen or could happen, and I'd tune into Law and Order, and there was something really comforting about the formula of it. The first half of the show was always the crime and the law part of it. The second half was the order part of it, and I found it soothing. I was hooked then, I'm still hooked now, and I'll be watching Law & Order Toronto, Criminal Intent. Let's get to know reggae fusion artist Amoy, who recently received a Juno Award nomination for Reggae Recording of the Year for her song Stir This Thing. Produced by Dunsome Records, Stir This Thing is a reggae dancehall tune that features a collaboration between Amoy and reggae vocalist Turbulence. She is a 7-time Juno Award nominee who presents an innovative and unique reggae sound that blends elements of old-school rocksteady, dancehall, soul, and R&B. She has performed around the world, including shows in Brazil, in Montreal, at the Mariposa Folk Festival, Northern Lights Festival Boreal, and the Afrofest Africa Festival. And she joins me today via Zoom. You grew up with grandparents in Jamaica who considered reggae vulgar, but you now make your living as a reggae and dancehall artist with lots of other influences woven in there. Tell me a little bit about growing up in that way.
Okay, so I got my start in the church. My grandparents were strict Christians, and my grandmother was adamant about getting us singing in the church choir. And all my family actually sang in the church choir. So that's where I got my start. I started singing in the choir from about the age of 3 and all the way up until she passed in my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I got my start. And she was very also strict about us not listening to anything outside of gospel music. The only other artists, I would say, that she would allow us to listen to outside of gospel was Bob Marley.
Right.
And so Bob Marley became my biggest influence. I fell in love with the writing because mm-hmm. his music is so conscious. And it inspired me to want to write music that motivated, uplifted, and inspired people to go out and live their lives in a better way, in a conscious way. And so when I left Jamaica after she passed away, I think I was around 16 years old at that time. And I had another year of school, high school. And then I came here to live with my mom here in Toronto, who was a victim of abuse. And so she escaped from that situation when I was around 6 years old. And so I came here after my grandmother passed and joined my mom's church here at Dundas Street Church of God here in Toronto, singing in the church choir, started a gospel group called Sisters in Christ. And I would see people like Julie Black, because I started writing my own music from back home, singing up in the church, in the trees after church. And and it was something that I was really shy about, to be honest. I was able to hide behind the people in the choir. Mm. And so I felt a little bit more comfortable. She kept on pushing me in. And I got bit by the bug, the music bug, if you will. And so I sang in the church choir here when I came to Toronto. And I saw people like Julie Black, who inspired me to go after it professionally. against my family's wishes, because they thought that was a pipe dream. It was a pipe dream to go after music. But I decided that that's what I wanted to do. I was attending Seneca College at that time, studying travel and tourism because I wanted to travel.
Of course.
And it was a way to appease my family as well. But as I was doing that, I realized I was starving my soul to feed my pocket. And I wanted to do the opposite and trust that money would come as well. And I dropped out of that that course and decided to go after music full time. And the rest is history. Now I'm singing reggae music.
And now you're singing reggae music. Let's dial back. There's a few things I want to ask you about in that answer. So after church, you'd go, you say, sit in a tree and write a song. Do you remember the songs that you were writing? What were they?
They were poems. They were poems that I'd written, and then I would turn them, because I don't know if you remember, back then they would have what we called matinees, they're musicals, yeah. Movies that people were singing in. And it was like a Sunday tradition after church. We would watch those Sunday matinees. And then afterwards, I'd run down into the backland, we called it, and climb up into the tree. I was a tomboy, still a tomboy. climb up into the trees and sing to my plants. I'm that girl. I'm a tree hugger. Sing to my plants and my goats and chickens, and dogs, everybody. Because I felt more safe. I felt safe with them. And it was just poems about life and just anything that was happening around me that I noticed that was happening around me. I would write about it and then make up my own, put it into words for myself and then put them to music in my own head, hearing melodies in my head and then sing them out, you know? So
music has always been a big part of your life, but you say when you came here and saw Julie Black and others that had done so well and made it a career that you decided to make it your own. Why is it, do you think, that you were shy about it, though, before that? Shy, not singing with a choir with 10 yeah. other voices singing with you?
Yeah. It was maybe, for me, it was, at the time, I didn't have enough belief, I think. There was some insecurity there because of the fact that I didn't really have the support from the family. I see some people... they get real support from the family. And it took me a while, honestly. I felt alone going after music. And back then, too, starting in Jamaica in the choir, it was a gift that I didn't realize that I had. My grandmother noticed it. And so she continued to push me and wanted me to develop that craft. But I didn't see it in myself then.
You're listening to Amoy on The Richard Krause Show. Her music, including the Reggae Recording of the Year Juno Award nominee, Stir This Thing, is available wherever you buy fine music.
I mean, there were times that they would call me out to do solos because they heard that I had a voice. But for me, within myself, I was still very shy. And I would go up and my lips would be trembling like crazy. I was so nervous. I was freaking out. It was so scary for me to be so vulnerable.
How do you get over that? Because I know John Lennon threw up every single time before he went on stage. I've heard, hundreds of stories like this. Performers that look so comfortable out there, but they have terrible nerves beforehand. How do you get over that?
You know, for me, it was the constant and the consistency of practicing and going and doing it over and over again. And then also getting the support from the audience feedback and the reactions. Cause I even remember from back home too, when even though I was trembling like crazy, people would literally be crying. They would feel something the what I was singing, what was coming out, the sounds, they would say, I have this resonance within the sound of my voice. That would make them emotional. It would touch them in a way. And then when I came here and I was pursuing it professionally, same thing happened in the church here. People would cry all the time. And then the people would come to me afterwards when I started to do my original songs and tell me how it made them feel. That constant reassurance allowed me, gave me confidence. The more and more I did it, the more confident I get. And even today, though, I will say, I still get nervous, but as soon as I start the first note, the first song, it just dissipates.
Tell me about being nominated again for another Juno Award. It's so exciting.
I know, right? And this is my seventh nomination. So you would think that by this point, because some people ask me, like, how does it feel the same? It still feels, I'm ecstatic. I am humbled. I am grateful. I am thankful. It's all of it, because this is, and I feel like I'm always, ever since I was younger, things for me, I always takes time. Mm. Always takes time. And it builds character. And I feel like the lesson in this for me is not just patience for me to get my win one day, because I know my win is coming one day. I know my win is coming. But what is it's allowed me to do when I sit back and I reflected on it, because I'm very spiritual. I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. I'm connected with the divine within me and my intuition. And what I was given, what came out of that reflection and meditation for me, was that I was learning how to support others, like my peers who were in my category, who were always getting the wins. It was my way to support them and to play well in the sandbox, if you will, you know, on the playground, until it's my turn. And that's how I take it. But I'm excited. I'm excited for the red carpet, because, you know, I love my fashion.
Yeah.
I'm excited to connect with the people and rub shoulders with the people that I admire in the music industry. This is one of the only times that you get to be in the same room with everybody from all the genres, and to network with them and collab and create opportunities to collaborate with these people. Yeah, so it's an exciting opportunity for me.
Your sound is influenced by so many other things. There's gospel in there, which makes sense. You grew up singing that. Yes. Soul music, R&B, there's reggae in there, there's dance hall in there. I mean, and it all fits together like pieces of a puzzle. But tell me a little bit about finding your sound. Was there always the idea that you would use these different genres as building blocks to build your sound, or did it happen because you networked with somebody really cool at one of these parties and they said, I'd love to play guitar on your song, and then it was there.
You know what? I love music so much. I mean, back home, my grandmother would made it she was just so adamant about what she wanted us to be influenced by. But I love music so much. And in Jamaica, you'd hear these out in the streets, these sound system playing all genres of music. It wasn't just reggae. You would, even on the radio, you'd hear country music. You'd hear soul. You'd hear funk. You'd hear disco, like all of it. And house music. And I loved all of it. I would sneak and listen to people like Sade. Sade is also one of my biggest influences.
I saw that. Yeah.
Grace Jones, and how she would play around with melodies, and she was so confident the way that she was unapologetically expressing herself from all angles, and she wasn't afraid to do that, and I learned from that, and I wanted to put that embrace a little bit of that within my music, a little bit of the sultriness from Sade and the jazz. Jazz was one of my is right now Chet Baker. Is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Chet Baker is like a constant background music for me and everything I do. And so listen to all and being influenced by all that, and then coming to Canada and then hearing, you know, a lot of the pop music, a lot of the electronic, even dance music. I loved it. And I wanted to somehow find a way to incorporate all these different nuances and fuse it, if you will, with my reggae, to create my own sound and be unique and stand out from the crowd. I wanted to, because it's so overly saturated, this music industry. Mm-hmm. And reggae is very much so a male-dominant genre. So I wanted to find a way to make myself be seen and heard uniquely from the rest, to stand out from the rest. And so that was my way of doing that, was incorporating everything that moved me in some way and put it into what I was doing, and create my own multidimensional sound, if you will.
You mentioned Grace Jones. I was out the other night, and in one of those places where people bring records, you know, you can bring a record and they'll play the whole record. Yeah. And somebody brought the record, I guess it was the best of Grace Jones, with La Vie en Rose and My Jamaican Guy. Yes. And it sounded fantastic. I mean, that record's 30 plus years old, and it sounds fantastic, because I think 30 years ago, she sounded like the future. And we're just catching up with her now.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, because that's what people always say to me. Like, there's Amoy. The reason why they would say, because in Patois they would say, the reason why you're in a bus yet, or you haven't blown up yet in English, is because you are ahead of your time. I feel like you're ahead of your time. So I can relate to that with Grace Jones.
You're listening to Amoy on The Richard Krause Show. Her music, including the Reggae Recording of the Year Juno Award nominee Stir This Thing, is available wherever fine music is sold. So what's next? After the Juno win, let's cross our fingers. What's next after that? Do you have a new record coming out? Is there something you're working on things now?
Yes. I'm currently writing and recording the latest album called The Shift. Stir This Thing, that is nominated for this Juno, is the first single from the album, The Shift. And so I'm still writing and I'm still recording. The Shift represents shifting, because The Light, my first solo album, came out in 2017. That was me discovering the light within myself after I lost my voice for a whole year in 2012. And I wasn't able to sing or write, and I thought that my career was over. But what was happening was my vocal cords were being recalibrated. And long story short, it was one of my most catalytic spiritual awakening. That is when I discovered for myself an intimate relationship with spirit, God, source, divine, creator, whatever you call it. And I got the realization and the knowing that I was getting a cleanup so that I was more conscious of what I was putting in my body to be able to bring out exactly what was appropriate and authentic. And so The Light came out in 2017 after that whole experience. And then Water came out in 2021. And that represents my rebirth after discovering The Light. Now The Shift is the introduction to this new version, from the old me to this new version of who Amoy is on a conscious level. From the unconscious to the conscious Amoy, living unapologetically and expressing myself this way and activating people to go out there and do what they want to do in the same manner, unapologetically. You know, that's The Shift. Stir it up, stir this thing. You never let me down. I'm gonna hold you down and keep you around. Light up on fire up this.
Okay. You mentioned Bob Marley. Have you seen Bob Marley, One Love?
I sure did. And I cried.
Yeah.
Because I love Bob Marley so much. I can relate to Bob Marley so much. He is the reason why I am doing what I'm doing today. And to see the honoring of him in that way, and even the actor. The actor, even though he's from England, he was so believable. He did such an excellent job for me, and I was so emotional. And I know that Bob Marley is proud, is proud to see, you know, that his legacy is living on, and the young generation gets to be introduced to who he really is and how powerful and magical he is in his music.
My two favorite scenes in that movie. I loved when he's auditioning for the record label as young Bob with the Waylon Wailers. Yes. Yes. Unreal. Like just that when they sing.
Simmer down.
So good. I just loved it. And then later when they're writing the song Exodus. And I just love in that apartment, you know, and you're listening to it. And then all of a sudden it comes together. I almost felt like I could see the wheels turning in his head.
Right,
he was writing the song. Yeah.
So. And isn't that interesting how it was a soundtrack too?
Yeah. And for a movie from 1960, movie. 20 years old at the time.
I love that too. Because things like that inspired me too. And then I get an idea and I start to write. So I can relate to him on so many levels. And Exodus is one of the songs that is a mainstay in my set when I perform. Because whenever I perform my sets, it's guaranteed to be a Bob Marley song. And Exodus is one of the main ones that I do. I fuse it with Damian Marley's Move. So it's a fusion of his original version and Move.
Well, Amoy, thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you. A pleasure talking to you too.
You were listening to Amoy on The Richard Krause Show. Her music, including the Reggae Recording of the Year Juno Award nominee Stir This Thing, is available now wherever you buy fine music. The musical dramedy Flora and Son, now streaming on Apple TV+, is a tribute to the power of music as an emotional bomb and hits all the right chords with a breakout performance from Eve Hewson as a single mom trying to connect with her rebellious son. At its core, the movie is a love story, but it's not a rom-com. This is about the love of family, music, and self, and is a rousing crowd-pleaser that breathes the same air as director John Carney's other films, Sing Street and Once. John Carney joins me in this segment to tell me about how music rescued him and why he didn't include my favorite Dublin pub in the movie.
Young Max, one more offense and you'll be behind bars. Flora, you're his mother. Find him something to do.
What are you doing right now?
You don't want to know.
What are you hoping to get out of this?
I thought this guitar might make my son think I'm cool.
I'll be back in an hour.
I don't care.
How annoying is he?
Very annoying.
I might learn the guitar myself.
Here's my one-on-one interview with John Carney. Congratulations on the film.
Thank you very much.
So tell me a little bit about music as a lifeline. That, to me, is the through line of this film. And it certainly, from my reading about you, seems to be very true in your life as well. So tell me about your personal experience with that.
Well, as it turns out, it's true of many musicians, which everybody thinks that's private and personal to themselves until they meet other musicians and you tell that story and they're like, that's exactly how I... Music is a, or rock music, let's say, is a thing, I think, that appeals to people who are falling outside some of the normal, regular groups in school or in, you know, whatever age you're at. There's some dog whistle, and I mean that in a positive sense, that term is very negative at the moment, but there's some little thing, look in somebody's eye that, like, you're a fellow journeyman on the road of rock and roll, you know, when you're 13, because you're not... the guy throwing the amazing pass or great at school or essays. There's a kind of a connection between these misfits, and they form bands often, and they come together and they form their own club that's a little bit outside and a little bit different, but it validates them. And it often gives a sense of control in a rudderless life. And that's definitely what music was for me. I mean, it was the greatest gift to get a guitar because it connected me with those other like-minded people. So I'm forever grateful and forever exploring that theme, I think, in my films.
Yeah, you also say that all the best decisions you've ever made in your life, you made while playing music.
Yeah, I think that's true. Or music was playing.
Or music was playing.
And I don't know if it was chicken or egg, you know, did I make the decision because the music... was playing because of what the music was speaking to me, or you know, the other way around. But it seems to me that music is the thing that kind of, if I was if there was a ambiguity or I wasn't sure or ambivalence about something, music was the thing that told you go for it.
Right.
You know, whether it was, and I mean like Frank Sinatra singing, come fly with me, or let's get those tickets. Or, you know, I mean, that's a very literal verb, but Frank says we should go, let's get out of here.
Well, tell me then about Flora, because she seems to be the a direct manifestation of you and perhaps your own mother, and dumpster diving is something that you have done in real life. So tell me a little bit about putting all that together and creating this character.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the mother thing, I definitely have been thinking a lot about my own mother and that journey, but I didn't want to literally do a thing about a little middle-class guy who has a mother and which is my story, you know. And I didn't want to get into to it being too personal for various reasons. One being actually that I wanted to tell a story. I didn't want to write a memoir or something like that. So I was thinking a lot about her. And then once I had the dumpster idea of a mother and a son, I was like, oh, well, let's it seems like I could retool this and cover the trails to my cave a little bit and still tell a story about my mother, but like disguise it a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, a tough working class inner city young mother. My mother wasn't a young mom, you know, unemployed, and was the very, very different from my own story.
You're listening to John Carney on The Richard Krause Show. His film, Flora and Son, is streaming now on Apple TV.
But it was I was a bit of a delinquent when I was a kid, so I could see I could put elements of that and own it in a nice way without it being painful for me to watch or anything like that. I don't actually feel that Eve is doing anything like my mother, but I do feel like I personally own the story and I'm part of it, and I have things to say about receiving a guitar from the mother figure, and the gratitude for that, and the gift of music and what that gift means, as opposed to just as a parent saying I'm going to get you something, yeah, or I'll get you this, or my mother did it. She gave me an instrument, which is, and back then there weren't a lot of, it was a different time.
And they would have been expensive, probably.
Absolutely. And you weren't seeing people throw them out in dumpsters you are now, yeah, where nobody seems to give a damn about things as much. But back then it was like, I've got a bass guitar. It was wood and wire and pegs and steel and all the various many elements of the world are going into this instrument. If you think about music in that way, like the instrument is made of different parts of,
elemental. Yeah.
The scratch plate is mother of pearl. Yeah. The strings are wire. There's a bit of ivory in old guitars. Yeah. There's catgut on violins. And then from that, you make another element, which is not strictly speaking an element, but you make music from that, which goes out into the world. Like it's deep stuff.
Well, I love how this movie kind of subverts what I thought it was going to be about. I thought we were in for a love story. I thought, and we are, it is a love story, but it's a different love story.
The title didn't give you a clue.
Well,
because I was wondering, does that give it away too much?
I don't think it does. Yeah. I don't think it does. And I loved that it is
a
love
turn.
But it takes a turn and it becomes something else. And it becomes about love very much, the love of the sun, the love of music, the transformative nature of art and how music can change things for people.
Yeah.
I thought it was really touching. And we have to talk about Eve Hewson. Loved her in Bad Sisters.
Yes, that was a great show. And
in this movie, I will tell you, fell in love with her even more deeply. This is, I can't imagine anyone else in this role.
Yeah, she definitely did that thing, which is she and it is a bit like being in a band. It's like once you have that person singing, you couldn't imagine anybody else doing that.
Yep.
There's no other singer that could be that person. And she did that to this movie. And not in a selfish way. Not in a she was like, I'm going to make this so that you could never imagine anybody else. And not only that, you can't get anybody else.
Man. Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought that was very cool. And it shows in the movie. I mean, she owns the film.
Oh, boy, she ever. I mean, it's powerful. It's funny. It's touching. It's raunchy. It touches on so many buttons. It's fantastic.
Well, that's what being in Dublin is like. There's a lot of people in Dublin, who can kind of like cycle through four huge personality dimensions in like a quick cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just in Dublin.
Oh,
And so I was disappointed that The Long Haul didn't make it into the film.
Yeah, that was a bit too of an old man's pub, though.
I loved it there.
That's a great buy.
That was John Carney on The Richard Krause Show. Find his great new movie, Flora and Son, on Apple TV Plus right now. Big thanks to John and all my guests for coming by today. Of course, as always, though, my biggest thanks goes to you for listening. I'm Richard Krause. Stay happy, stay healthy, stay safe, stay weird, and I'll talk to you again soon.